Okay, pursuant to Government Code Section 54953E and the state declared emergency, this meeting of the Board of Library Trustees will be conducted exclusively through teleconference and Zoom video conference. The COVID-19 state of emergency continues to directly impact the ability of the members to meet safely in person and presents imminent risks to the health of attendees. Therefore, no physical meeting location will be available. Please be mindful that the teleconference will be recorded, as any Board of Library Trustees meeting is recorded, and all other rules of procedure and decorum will apply for Board of Library Trustees meetings conducted by teleconference or video conference. This meeting will be conducted in accordance with the Brown Act, Government Code Section 54953. Any member of the public may attend this meeting. Questions regarding this matter may be addressed to Eve Franklin, Administrative Secretary. The Board of Library Trustees may take action related to any subject listed on the agenda. Okay, shall we call the roll?
Amy Ross?
Here.
Sophie Hahn?
Present. Sorry, I had trouble unmuting.
Diane Davenport?
Here.
Beverly Green?
Here.
And John Soloski?
Yes, present.
Thank you.
Okay, next would be public comment on non-agenda matters. Do we have anybody signed up? I say that's a no.
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. And comments from library unions. Do we have any of the unions here that wish to speak?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Okay. You know, I'm having a little trouble hearing. I'm going to try that. Who is here?
This is Andrea Malarkey from
SAA. Hello, Andrea. Hello.
Hello. Am I good to go?
Yes.
Excellent. Yes, I am Andrea Malarkey. I'm a teen librarian at the Taria Hall Pittman South Branch, and I'm a member of SEAU 10-to-1 CSU PTRLA, that's the Community Services Unit and Part-Time Rec Leaders Association. And I know there's a lot going on, but tonight I want to talk to you specifically about vacancies, their impact on public service and staff well-being, and the related issue of just how much money the library is saving because of them. And basically, there's a large availability of funds right now due to salary savings from vacancies that have been open over quite some time. And there are at least two major problems that come out of that. And one is that services to the public suffer when there are not the workers to deliver them. And the other is that workers and our families suffer when we have to carry the load of multiple workers whose positions remain vacant in our facilities and in our workplaces. And you're getting a budget update tonight, and the information in that update is really pretty much jaw-dropping. I actually had to reread it multiple times. Revenue is up in every fund over last year, and expenditures are down in every fund over last year. On the expenditure side in particular, the staff report says that costs are, and I'm going to quote, favorably below revised budget with savings primarily due to personnel savings, end quote. And I don't know that I would agree that that's actually a favorable situation. That word is a little triggering for me because I am one of the people who bears the weight of those vacancies. But I do have to agree that expenditures are way, way down, and it's because of empty staff positions. And in staffing, that's so bad that personnel costs are down even from last fiscal year, which was a pandemic year with a hiring freeze. We're down even from the pandemic hiring freeze year. That's how bad it is. And somehow, even now that hiring has restarted and a commitment and a recommitment has been made and repeated over and over to fill these positions, our personnel costs continue to be down and to drop. And we've been gathering information on vacancies over the past months. And what we've learned from management's own numbers is that the library has saved upwards of $3.8 million in salary savings alone this fiscal year. That's the number, 3.8 million, not even two thirds of the way through the fiscal year. That is a lot of money. And pairing it with the budget numbers produced in this packet, you can see it's not being spent in any large part on backfilling positions or supporting staff with additional capacity. And so while a corporation might look at that large savings and see profit or shareholder dividends or something really optimistic like that, we're a public library. And I can't look at that number, a number that I'm like really confident is going to top over $5 million by the end of the fiscal year. I can't see that number and see anything but services not delivered to the Berkeley community. And so that money represents hours that we're not open. We're not open on Sundays. We're not open in the evenings. So working people have very limited options for coming to the library. It represents programs we can't offer, because we don't have staff to plan and deliver them. It represents outreach we can't do. And it represents workers laboring under the weight of the understaffing. It's folks doing work that's out of their classification because there's nobody in their classification, in that classification to do it. It's workers covering desk shifts and moving among locations to patch holes in the schedule when those schedules don't have sufficient staff of their own. And it's workers covering desks they've never worked at, serving audiences they've never been trained to serve, and backing each other up at every turn. And we believe deeply in worker solidarity and having each other's backs. So we do that. You know, I work one day a week at a branch that I'm not regularly scheduled to, and I often go there and there's, you know, two people maybe who regularly work that branch. And the rest of us are people carrying folks along. I'm weeding a collection at the North Branch right now that hasn't been weeded, hasn't really had serious attention since 2019. The teen collection at North Branch still had the new books in the new bookshelf from 2019. Like that's where we're at, folks. So as much as we believe in having each other's backs and sort of like picking up after each other and trying to keep the ball moving forward, we also believe in community service and ensuring that we can do as much as we can. But it can't be denied that we are forced, as one coworker put it to me recently, to do less with less. We're doing less for the community. And the toll it's taken on workers is really immense. And if you wanna know why personnel costs continue to go down, it's because workers continue to give up. We continue to see retirements and workers quitting to go to other library systems or just to stop working while they look for something new. We're tired, we're sick. I got COVID at work earlier this year. North Branch has got two coworkers down this week with COVID. They're already way understaffed and we're beyond burnt out. And so I'm coming to you today to ask you to do two things. And there are two things to demonstrate your solidarity with library workers and with library patrons. And the first is that I see from your work plan that you have a staffing update in January. That's great, but you're not due to have another one until November 22. That's like 9 months later. And I don't know if that's because you don't expect much to change. If so, that is bleak. Or if it's because you just trust it's gonna go fine. But I have to tell you, the intention all along has for it to be fine, and it's not gone that way. And so I'm asking you to ask for more regular staffing updates. Yes, it's probably pretty tiring to give and receive these upsetting updates that show little to no progress, but please take that and imagine how exhausting it is to be the worker represented by these bleak numbers. And your interest in and attention to and questions about staffing matter. And the second thing I'd like to ask you to do is to think long and hard and creatively about what can be done with that $5 million the library will save from the understaffing. You know, invite a conversation with workers and have them tell you directly what issues are that are impacting them because of the vacancies. And what would help to repair the damage done by that extra weight that they've been carrying? Ask workers directly. Maybe have an open forum for workers to tell their stories here in a meeting or somewhere else. But in short, I'm asking you to seek to make whole the workers who've been really just doing way above and beyond the call of duty in this worker vacuum, and try and make whole the community who's not been getting the services they deserve and have paid for. We need to get these vacancies filled. And even when we do that, there's going to be a long tail of recovery for those of us who have been going sort of without stop, working on site through the pandemic, through all of these changes that are coming at us, without coworkers, without sufficient coworkers to back us up. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Are there any of the other unions? Is there someone here who wishes to speak? I don't see anybody, but all right. We'll move on to comments from the Board of Trustees. Who wants to go first? Sophie, how about you?
Sure. I'd like to say, after having heard from Andrea Malarkey, you know, I think we really hear the amount of stress that all of our library employees have been under. I have no doubt that it starts from Director Mayer, who actually started during COVID. She has never presided over a normal library. And obviously every single worker on the floor has been through a really difficult time and has worked over time, if not specifically extra hours. It's just been a really hard environment to work in. And I think we are certainly cognizant also of the toll that library closure and more limited access to the libraries has meant for the public as well. I will say we have similar issues throughout the city organization because of the hiring freeze that was put in place. And there are also challenges in our personnel department at the city. There have been departures and, you know, it's just been a really demanding time, and they are actually down on staff as well. So it's kind of a perfect storm, I would say, between the pandemic, the freeze on hiring, and then the fact that the department that we have depended on at the city for hiring is also very stressed. So I just want to acknowledge that I think it's been really difficult. And I very much like the idea of getting a monthly staffing update. I certainly think that even if what we're hearing is the same thing over and over, I think it's good for us to remain aware of the staffing challenges and how that's stressing individuals and how it impacts the whole organization. So if that's something that we can do kind of on a regular basis until we kind of pull out of all this, I think that would be useful and informative. And I certainly would be happy to hear from other workers from the library. Always welcome to come to these meetings. These meetings are public. There is time allocated, but people can also raise their hands and speak during non-agendized comment. And I just want to extend that invitation at any and all meetings. I would be very happy to hear from library workers how things are going. So.
Thank you, Sophie. I saw John's hand first and Diane's after that. Go ahead, John.
Hi.
Thank you, President. I got three or four things. I think I would be remiss if I didn't now mention what's going on in the world. And just relay my solidarity with the people of Ukraine and a hope that this can be resolved sooner rather than later, without more destruction, without more deaths, without a sovereign country being overrun by another power. And Eve, you sent me an email last month about the quote I gave during my trustee's comment. Again, and I don't know who this is attributed to, but life is simply one damn thing after another. And I'm sorry for the language, but it has struck me again. Life is simply one damn thing after another. We're dealing with COVID, we're dealing with economic uncertainty, and now Russia has invaded a sovereign country and thrown the whole world basically in disarray. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or this. We just don't know what's going to come out of this. And again, I want to express my own solidarity with the people of Ukraine. And I hope they get out of this as a sovereign nation. That's my heartfelt wish. Okay, moving on. I want to comment about our director's we've been getting emails, the board has been, trustees have been getting emails about, we've had two cases of COVID at North Branch. In some ways, this relates to the SEIU comment as well. I think our staff is under stress, is under a lot of uncertainty, and certainly overworked because of unfilled positions. But I wanna acknowledge and applaud our director, Tess Meyer, Mayor's decision to continue with the mask policy. Because we're, you know, agencies, the city, they're starting to loosen up on masks indoors. But unless we know people are vaccinated, as Tess stated in one of her emails, and as is just kind of self-evident in common sense, how do we know if somebody's vaccinated or not? And are we going to take staff time to determine that? And it doesn't make sense to do that. So for the time being, and Tess, you can correct me later, for the time being, we're still a masked facility, agency, right? And I wholeheartedly agree with that. And thank you, Tess. And finally, the SEIU comments from the rep. Yes, it is problematic. Yes, it is a burden on staff who are on the floor, staff who are working. And I readily acknowledge that. And quite honestly, I wish I had a way out of that. And I would agree that if we don't have an update until November, I would say bi-monthly. I'm not sure about monthly, but I would say bi-monthly reports to the trustees makes a lot of sense at this point. And please, Andrea, if there's anything you think I can do or the library can do, the trustees and Tess can do, let me know. But I don't have anything concrete in mind to solve this. And by the way, I just want to go on the record. It's not 5 million yet, but the 3.8 million, I'm not allocating that to anything else. I just want to go on the record. I'm not agreeing to that in any way, shape, or form. So just so you know, and thank you for the comments. I appreciate them. All right. That's it.
Thank you, John. Diane?
I'd like to second a little bit of what John said, in that I think that we've all been concerned in this time about staff resiliency and how much staff are working and how we've got, as library folks, got called back on the line way sooner than many city departments. And I think we as a board recognize how very hard the staff has worked and how they've tried in every way to make sure that every site has enough folks to maintain minimal staffing in these times. And a bunch of things were stacked against us. COVID, certainly. The hiring freeze, certainly. The lack of staffing in the city personnel department. The lack of staffing in our own personnel department. But we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. The librarian interviews are coming. We know they're a good group of people. They've been vetted. You know, we're very excited about that. And we know that things can change with this administration. So while we can certainly look and listen to staff for other ideas, I think administratively we're on the right track to get going around this. So I thank Andrea for her comments, because I know it comes from compassion and a caring about staff. And we do share that compassion as well. Secondly, on probably a happier note, I'd like to say that I got to go to both the Kurt Waller and the Village Rhythms drumming programs at South and at North. And I was taken by both. The Kurt Waller program was a little bit smaller and over in the park, but boy, can that man tell stories. He was just, he had you on the edge of your seat, story after story and song after song. And the Village Rhythm drumming folks had the entire area outside North Branch up and dancing, whether you were 6 months old or 80 years old. Instruments were handed out. African clothing was handed out, and the whole place just danced as he told the story of how people got together to dance in these ways, to share stories and the history that went on and on in the culture. So it was just a very exciting time, and I really want to thank the library for having such terrific programming. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Diane. Beverly, I do see your hand.
Hello, I want to echo some of these comments here. Andrea, thank you for bringing that information forward and for sharing it with us here at the meeting. Secondly, I want to thank the library for the diverse programs that it's put on during the month of February for Black History Month, and also for the Chinese New Year's. Thank you.
Well, the trouble with going with last is that everybody's already said what I was having in mind to say, but I will repeat that we do know that people are under stress, working hard, and it's life is tough. I mean, I can barely listen to the news anymore. It's Ukraine, it's COVID, it's climate change, it's wildfires, it's disaster. I mean, it's hard. It's hard for everybody. And I'm not dismissing Andrea's comments at all. I think they're totally valid, and it's something we really need to work on. And I think having a more frequent staff update is an excellent idea and a first step towards making that happen. Thanks. So, and Diane, is your hand is still up?
No, I forgot to put it down. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay. Okay. All right. Next would be the minutes from February. Has anybody discovered any errors or discrepancies? I did not. I don't see anybody's hand. Would someone like to move to accept the minutes as submitted? I'm sorry, who was that?
Sophie.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sophie. I didn't hear well. Sophie,
I'm sorry. Is this better? I heard my
in my ear, it's sort of distorted. I don't know if it's me or you.
I'd love to know if I have a problem on my end, if other people are having that problem.
That's better.
It's gotten better.
That's okay. Better. Okay, Sophie.
Speaker right, closer.
Will somebody second to accept the minutes?
Second.
I'll second that.
Second. We need to call a roll.
Okay, there was also the contract on the consent calendar. Do you want to?
Can we do those both at the same time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Sophie, will you move to accept both of those?
Sure, happy to add that to the motion.
Okay, and
Diane? Same on the second.
Okay, thank you. Now we will call the roll for both items on the consent calendar.
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Soloski?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, motion's carried. On our action calendar, we have the BOLT agenda topic calendar from Director Meyer. So Tess, you're up.
Thank you. I would like to just introduce this briefly by saying that in our regular agenda setting meeting for the board meeting, the president and vice president and I discussed the fact that it would be helpful for the whole Board of Library Trustees to review and also provide feedback on the types of topics that should be covered in the Board of Library Trustee meetings. And while we did internally have a calendar that we used to track a number of different types of topics, including all of the different financial updates and including all of the topics relating to trustee reappointments, we wanted to provide you all with a working list. This is, of course, a draft list of a variety of topics that are organized in under different themes. So of course, some of them just relate to annual calendar setting that needs to occur every year. There's content around trustee appointments, there's special topics, there's policy. So I'd like to direct your attention, please, to the attachment that you have or that you had in your board packet. And it's the BOLT agenda topic calendar. And I wanted to provide all of the trustees with an opportunity to provide feedback on what you see represented here, where you might see various gaps. I do want to offer a clarification since under the special topics, there is a staffing update, an annual staffing update. I'd like to take the opportunity to clarify that that's an annual staffing update that's intended to be a summary of the year. That's how that report has functioned. And I'd also like to remind the team that I've provided a monthly staffing update since since probably the month that I started in this position, there has been information about recruitment delivered at every board meeting. So I just want to clarify that the staffing update that you see listed here as an annual topic is intended to be more of a retrospective of the previous year that's then supplemented by the monthly updates that are provided in the director's report. I'd also like to call out that we have included under special topics updates on the library's progress in EDI and on the Racial Equity Action Plan. Of course, as we discussed last month, we have not yet established the plan, but once we have a working document and plan in place, the intention is to update the board regularly in terms of that. We also have added a State of the Collection report, which is not something that had previously been offered. We're proposing to introduce also State of the Physical Plant report, which we provided in January, and I think that that would be a good idea to do annually as well. And we will be providing a strategic planning update, which I see is very closely tied to the budget cycle, because of course, we need to ensure that the budget is aligned with the strategic priorities once we have a strategic plan in place. You also see a reference to a work plan, and the library's work plan is what we're working with right now until we get to the point where we can have a strategic plan. So I'm imagining that eventually there would be a transition where we would be providing an update on the strategic plan. We are also imagining that each department in the library would have an opportunity just to report on its regular work, its operations. And we have the first of those reports tonight, which we'll introduce later. And so you see a list of all of the departments, and those are intended to be just department updates to make sure that the trustees have an opportunity to learn about all of the work of the library, because everybody's work and contribution is important. So I think on that note, I will pause and see whether there is feedback that you wanted to provide, or if you had any questions about the list of topics.
Diane has her hand up.
Tess, I have a couple of things. On the very first page, you list all staff meetings and late library openings. In the past, occasionally, the library has also had closed for a couple of all-day staff training things. So I wonder if we want to add that just in case it comes up. On the third page, let's see, it's where the foundation and the friends are listed. I know you and the vice president get to, in the 2x4 meeting, get to hear from the foundation and friends, but I think it would be really lovely if each of them could appear before us and give a short verbal report of how they see their year going, what the foundation is wanting to do, what the Friends is looking to do. Because I think one of our roles as a board is to support each other when we're out in the community talking to others. So that would be particularly helpful to me. And then finally, in the departmental topics, is the Central Support Services staff report the same as the teen services staff report listed further on down, or are those two different things? And if so, what's the difference? That's all. Thank you. What a great list. I was stunned. Thought, oh my God, why haven't we thought of this before? So thank you, President, Vice President, and Director, for doing a great thing of pulling this stuff together.
Thank you for your feedback. Before we go to the next speaker, I just want to give credit where it's due. It was really our Vice President Han that I think really initiated this conversation. And I think it was very helpful because it helped us sort of consider what the frequency of certain reports should be. And the other recommendation that I think was helpful to hear was that we might eventually put this in a format that focuses more on a calendar year. That wasn't something that we could do for this particular board packet, but the thinking was that it would be easier for you to see the timetable if it were sort of organized by month and then the types of topics that would normally be scheduled in that month. So with respect to, the question that you had, thank you very much for your ideas. The question about central support, I think that would really depend on how much content there was Trustee Davenport to report on. Mm-hmm. So for example, if there was really, I think it could be that there would be a need to have a distinct teen services or teen activities report. And I think that as we're able to introduce more aspects of central support, like when we can bring the social worker program online and initiate some of that work, that would probably need to be its own report, I would imagine. So that's probably how we would make that determination, is how much information, how long. So I'll end my comments there.
John, I saw your hand, and Sophie, you're next after that.
Thank you. First, I want to support Diane's idea about, I'm not sure how often, but a periodic report from to the trustees, from the friends and the foundation, mm-hmm. not just to the leadership. Because I think that gets out. If it's here at a board meeting, it gets out to the community a little bit more. And that's important. It's also important for us to listen to them and know what they're doing and what they need. So thank you, Diane. On page 3 of 5 on this, the state of the physical plant, last report to Bolt was 1/19/22, which I recall. And the next report to Bolt is 1/23/22, and I'm not clear what that means. Is that a typo?
Perhaps. It's definitely slated for January. There's nothing special about that date.
So it's 23.
I think it's intended to be January of 23.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Just want to be clear. And we have a report coming September on the state of the collection, which I look forward to. But I'm just speaking as one trustee here, because we've had over the year, many years I've been in Berkeley, there's been a lot of consternation over the collection and how it's handled, how it's been called, et cetera, et cetera. Would it be appropriate, and this is one trustee, and I'm not going to push this too hard on others, but would it be appropriate to look at our policy and maybe amend that, or make some additions, or make some comments on those, on that policy? Because as I've said, we've had a history of some angst over our collection management. So I'm just putting that out there for other board members to consider. And thank you. I'm not sure I have anything else specific right now. And I would say thank you, Amy, Sophie, and apparently especially Sophie and Tess. This is a really comprehensive list. And it's hard to wrap my head around the whole thing and figure out when's the best time to hear about things. But thank you for putting this together and getting it to us. I appreciate that.
Thank you, John. So, Sophie, your hand is up.
Yeah, I hate to burst everyone's bubble. And of course, I love the thanks. But, you know, having a list of regular things that we do month by month as a board is definitely something that I brought up. But then it turned out that Eve already had the list. So I think I just want to shine a light on where this list came from. Neither I nor Amy, and I don't believe Tess actually physically put this list together. Eve had, I think, and Tess, please correct me if I'm wrong, had been, you know, obviously she's keeping track of things. We come and go, directors come and go. Eve keeps this boat afloat.
Eve is forever.
So, yeah, so I just really, really wanted to, I wanted to throw a huge portion of that gratitude and over where it belongs. But I would also very much appreciate, and I actually sort of tried to start doing it myself, but guess what? I didn't have time to finish. I think for us and for the public, but certainly for us as a board, trying to get a sense of the rhythm of our work and have an idea of what topics that are perennial every year are going to be coming up in what months. I think that would just be a really good tool for us. So if it were possible to put together a chart that is organized by month and sort of says, you know, January, and then has a list of things that we generally either have to do in January or that we traditionally do in January in one box, and then maybe another box that says...
I think we get the picture.
Yeah, sort of discretionary things that we might choose to do at those times. I think that could be really a great tool for us. So that's the only innovation here. Eve had everything else under control.
Thank you, Sophie. I've said before that Eve is, remember when you were in high school and the school secretary was actually the person who ran the entire school at all times?
Yeah.
And Eve reminds me of that. And I am very grateful that we have her with us. Always cheerful,
absolutely.
Always helpful, you know, and it's really a lovely thing. Thank you, Eve. Anybody? I don't see anybody else's hand up. Tess,
actually, mine is up.
I'm sorry, Beverly. Okay, I got you now.
A brown hand is the same color as the wood here. I'll have to change that. I think this is excellent. I did want to ask a question around the policies. And so do we periodically review the policies? At the place where I work, we have categories of policies. And so there's a mandatory review of the policies every, 2, 3, 4, or 5 years, depending on which category they are. Mm-hmm. So it looks like some of them have been around for, mm-hmm. they've been with us. And so is there a policy around how often we should review various policies, or is that something we might look at in agenda planning in the future?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't believe that there's a policy that specifies the term of review, but past practice prior to all of the more recent developments over the past few years, really, I think the goal was annually for most of them. And it was achievable, I think, because it was coordinated, and because if you review them frequently enough, you're not having to sort of catch so many significant changes. And so with respect to Trustee Solovsky's comment too, the trustees should be reviewing the collection policy just like they should be reviewing every other policy. The one that we did most recently was circulation. We definitely need to review the suspension policy. I think that there's a need for that as well. In our agenda setting meeting, we also discussed that it would be helpful for library staff to provide feedback about the relative urgency of review of each of them, because some of them sort of come into play with more frequency and impact the public, I think, differently. And so that's why the collection policy, the suspension policy is very important. And there are also just some cleanup items that we identify in the other ones. So thank you for making that point. That does need to be a goal. And if we were to have more of a calendar format for this, the different policies would be assigned different months and they would be brought for your review accordingly.
Thank you.
I'd also, if I will, just make one more comment about the reason why the collection policy would be important to review, and that is that there's a lot more dialogue that's emerging that's not so much specific to Berkeley Public Library and the history of how the collection was managed in our library system, but there's really a lot of dialogue that's occurring around how libraries should appropriately handle materials that are now determined to contain imagery that's racist, or you know, that actually, in looking at them now, you know, are problematic by today's standards. And there's a lot of debate around this within the library world, and there are different perspectives that librarians are bringing to bear. And so I think that when it comes time for us to review that specific policy, it will be important for us also to potentially consider some of those issues as well, and maybe even have a presentation in tandem where we go into a little bit more depth about the different ways that libraries are handling this, because what we're seeing is there isn't actually any longer a uniform practice, mm-hmm. that people are taking different mm-hmm. positions on this. And I do think that it will it eventually sort of come to bear at Berkeley Public as well. So I just wanted to mention that.
Okay. Well, that will be a very interesting debate, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm looking. I don't see any hands. So I think we can move on. I'm sorry, Beverly, when different people talk, my screen rearranges everybody. And I think that's why I sometimes miss hands. So don't hesitate to point out to me that your hand is up.
No worries.
I just wanted to say that if you click on the participants logo, it will give you a list of participants on the right. Do you see that? I'm going to raise my hand now.
Yeah,
you can find the raise hand, and maybe Beverly, will you raise your hand?
I am not. Okay.
Did you click on the participants?
Wait. Participants, and I see your hand. Thank you. That maybe that'll help.
Yeah, I think when you chair a meeting, it's way easy because those will not jump around, and they will always be listed in the order. They should be listed. Eve, is she a co-host?
I'm sorry?
Is she a co-host for the meeting?
No, Tess and I are hosts.
If she's a co-host, then they won't jump around in order.
Well, all right. I think this the participants list will be helpful. Thank you.
And when you raise your hand, that's usually when you jump up over to the left.
Oh.
So that's part of why there's jumping up going around.
Okay. And it's supposed to make life easier, but doesn't always. Okay, I think we can go on to, everybody's hand is down. I can see that. Okay. We can go on to the information reports. I see that Shani has been waiting very patiently for her turn, and your turn is now.
Thank you very much. Everybody can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Shani Leonards. I'm the branch head of the Claremont Branch Library, and I'm happy to be here this evening. I also think Eve is fantastically competent, and she has my thanks this evening for managing my slide deck. So next slide, please. So the Claremont Branch Library has actually been a library for 113 years. And we've been, right? It's pretty impressive. And it's and we've been at the current location for 98 years. We were designed by James Playcheck, who is the architect who designed the North Branch and the Central Library. And it's a lovely old world feeling library. It's in the Tudor style. There's lots of lovely architectural details on the outside and the inside of the building. It's got two working, beautifully carved fireplaces. Mm. And it was renovated in 2012, and it's got all the modern conveniences and modern state of the technology in this charming edifice. They added 350 square feet to the building. It's a LEED certified silver building, so it was done in an environmentally sensitive way when they renovated it. And while we're still the smallest branch, it made things like sight lines and programming much more possible than it was in the previous iteration. For those of you who haven't visited the Claremont Branch Library, it's on the Berkeley-Oakland border. We're a block west of College Avenue, located just around the corner from Alta Bates Hospital and very close to UC Berkeley. We're actually like within the most population dense mile of Berkeley. So we're pretty busy, and we see a lot of students as well as tons of residents. It's one of the most walkable branches in the system. Next slide, please.
Okay.
I'm sorry, thanks. So before the pandemic, we circulated close to 14,500 items a month. We answered around 200 readers advisory and computer tech questions, and we hosted an average of 51 class visits and outreach visits and programs for adults and teens and seniors and tiny babies every month. The bulk of that programming, while we did programming across the age spectrum, an awful lot of that programming was done by the children's librarian you all met last week, Michael Quinde, who mm-hmm. was presenting about outdoor programming at Bateman Park. And he did around 3 to 5 class visits a week, which is why we had so many programs happening, in addition to all of us hosting a variety of programs, which are on the next slide. So the following slide shows weekly programs that we held in the first column, and the second column is monthly programs. There are a bunch of programs that don't show up because we did them 3 or 4 times a year. But we had a weekly movement and music program that Michael piloted for the system. We had a baby rhyme time that he piloted for the system that was wonderful. It was my favorite program. It was for pre-walkers, and it was super great. And there was time for parents to hang out afterwards and bond, and there were like nice mommy and daddy interactions. We had the outdoor story time that you guys heard about, which grew out of the space crisis on our branch because it was such a popular program, even though we kept adding sessions. We had computer classes every week for seniors. We had a tabletop game night for adults. We had an adult movie night. We had teen game programs every week in our kind of flexible programming area. And we had a teen comic book program every week on the Willard campus, which is located just about, it's like a 7-minute walk from our location. Monthly program examples are our third grade book club that we ran for 3 or 4 years before the pandemic, a monthly maker lab that was intergenerational chess program that was run by a volunteer with library staff support. We had a family yoga program. We also sometimes had adult yoga programs and adult dance programs. We had a monthly poetry circle. And then we had around 12 outreach visits a month to preschool, elementary, and middle schools. And that last slide is about our kind of big ticket programs every month. We, we'd have a magician, or we'd have, I'd have a concert or a dance program every month. And sometimes we'd have more than one or two. Like sometimes I'd have, a program that was a little bit more nuts and bolts involving the city, or Michael would have a cooking program on top of a magician, that sort of thing. Next slide. And then we had COVID, and things changed dramatically. And we really moved into sort of order fulfillment. We'd quarantined all of our items for 3 days. It became very physical because people couldn't come in. So we expanded, we really expanded the section of our library for holds. We would quarantine them. We'd touch every single book multiple times to get them in the hands of the patrons. And we heard from people over and over again that they missed being able to browse in person. So we were the second site to launch an outdoor browsing cart. Michael was the first, he was part of a pair of librarians to pioneer virtual programming during this period. He had some special programs, and so did Glenn Ingersoll, one of our library specialists. We had some adult book programs and some kids book programs, as well as virtual literacy and school events. And Michael reintroduced outdoor story times and was the first, as you heard, the first individual to do that in the system. When we returned to indoor services, it was pretty exciting. We saw it as an opportunity to rethink how we were going to respond to patron needs and how we were sort of going to meet patron needs as they sort of unfolded under the specter of a contagious illness. So we moved some things around for sight lines. We created sections for people to kind of interact with the collection away from seating. We sort of created little pop-up areas. We probably quintupled or hextupled our display areas. And we already had a lot of face outs, but more staff became involved in our sort of marketing and programming, not programming, I'm sorry, marketing and display efforts. And let's see what else is on here. Wonderful day. When we finally started in October of last year, we started having small groups of kids come back in just to check out books and leave. So they were socially distant, safe return to the library. So in the past, Michael would do a story time or a teen librarian, or I would talk to older patrons and there'd be a longer presentation. The presentation that needed to happened outside of the library in the beginning. Then kids came in, they got their books and they left. So that connection, we tried to reestablish it as quickly as we could. And at this point in time, the current focus is really on outdoor programming or visiting schools and sites, since it's hard for them to come to us right now to bring the school connection to them. And as you heard, a lot of it is like connecting around library cards or getting to other parts of the city that don't have librarians who can go out and visit them right now because of the aforementioned hiring freeze. Next slide. So these are some slides showing some of the changes that we made. I had a ton of these. I whittled it down to just a few, but we really moved a lot of things around. On the left-hand side, you can see the children's DVD. The top row is all face outs because this is a really highly, all of our DVDs circulate a lot throughout the entire system. Our location's no exception. And so we really expanded the amount of space devoted to them. And we also typically theme the top shelf. One of the individuals who's our lead display maker typically comes up with a theme and we sort of showcase it for a week or a month, depending on what it is. On the right side, you can see the adult section of the library, and this is taken from sort of the front of the library, like the entryway of the library, looking toward the back of the library. And I had a before and after, and Alicia is on this call. So several years ago, I started talking with Alicia about the possibility of maybe swapping where some bookcases were located and a table so that we could have a better view of that room that you guys can see with the wooden border and all the glass mm-hmm. on the left-hand side. That's our teen room. And we used to not be able to see it from the front of the library where all the library, staff are always moving around, but some of us are always based at the front desk, right, to help patrons at the information desk or to help check out books. And we couldn't see this because the bookcases, which you can barely see on the right-hand frame mm-hmm. there, they're the kind of like slat wall looking thing. Effectively, they were tiered, so they effectively completely blocked the room. And there were kind of expected pinch points in the building. Like we'd often have, some concerns around safety at the computers or something would happen involving the teens and the patrons. So one of the things we did was sort of lobby pre-COVID for swapping this, and Alicia supported us and had the floor. We had to kind of small way rewire the floor. So while we were closed for the pandemic, one of the awesome things that was accomplished was this rewiring happened. And when we reopened, we were able to move the cases over. So we also created some new patron seating areas, moved some chairs around. So we have good sight lines in the adult area now. We used to only have it in the children's area. Next slide. So these are some examples of things that we've done to kind of create places to explore away from other patrons as we sort of slowly welcome people back and they become more comfortable being in a space with other people. On the left here, we have a kind of view of the children's area. As you can see, only one of the computers is open. There's a big bulletin board behind it with pictures of children's books celebrating African-American History Month. And Michael put that together. And then in the middle two slides, you can see examples of sort of pull out displays that we have all over the building. The left one in the middle is near our teen room. The one on the right is at an end cap of the adult area. And these things turn over constantly. And you can change the slide. There's some bookmarks sticking out of the middle one. That's a project that one of my team is working on. And the next three slides are our slides introducing my staff. So Glenn Ingersoll is in the first slide. He's our lead for something called the Staff Bookmarks Project. We've been doing that for about 4 or 5 years. And all of the staff who've worked at Claremont over the last 5 years, and a number of them have been promoted into other positions or gone on to other jobs, will submit 5 or 6 titles with annotations, or sometimes Glenn will create the annotation if they don't have time to make an annotation. And we stick them in books in the collection and have them out, and people love it. I mean, we've always gotten good feedback about it. We've really expanded that since we reopened the branch. In the middle, you'll see Linda McDonald, who has recently started making bookmarks around the theme and helping with display. She's also our safety lead. And then on the right there, you'll see Chinkita. She is one of the founding members, one of the core members of RJAG, the Racial Justice Advisory Group. But she also is the lead at Claremont for displays. And she's been doing it for about 6 or 7 years. And they're fantastic. In all of her reviews, going back for 6 or 7 years, the fact that she highlights gems from the collection are usually around the themes of like Women's History or African-American History Months, but also sometimes around smaller history months or like a small holiday. Like right now, we have one for St. Patrick's Day, but she has books around, you know, Irish folklore and traveling to Ireland for children. She has a number of different topics. So she's Irish writers or Irish American writers. So she is our lead for that project and does a great job. Next slide, please. So these are the 4 aides at Claremont. We were lucky enough recently to be able to hire. We had 3 aide vacancies. And so in the last 7 months, we've had 3 new aides start, and they're all at differing points of their training. On the far left, we have Chris, who's a veteran. And I just want to say Chris was with us during the pandemic, and within 20 minutes of the call for people to be disaster workers, EOC workers for the City of Berkeley, Chris had written to me asking if he could sign up to volunteer. So he's been with Berkeley for over 20 years, and he was the first staff member at Claremont to go into a site. He worked at the showers, and he was the last staff member from Claremont to return to work. The other 3 people in the slide there, we have Lillian Whitehouse, William Hoberg, and Camilla Shinbaro. Lillian just finished her first six months with us, and William and Camilla have been with us a little less long, but we are awfully happy to have them. Next slide. And you met Donovan and Michael last week. Michael does so much more than just programming at the branch, as does Donovan. But it's worth saying that the work that they've been doing throughout the pandemic and then when we reopened is tremendous. I mean, getting the music to the kids and kind of having a sense of connection and joy continue through what's a pretty stressful period for all of us, but especially I think for children who haven't any kind of context for dealing with this. I think it's one of the most powerful things I've ever seen. During the pandemic, they were practicing together, as you heard. They had like little vignettes on our website, bits and pieces where you could hear them singing songs and stuff that got lots of views. And as soon as we were able to do things in person again, they started refining it, which is pretty typical of Michael, like innovating and then refining the heck out of something until it's just a model program for like the national level. Caroline Lee is in the next slide. She has taken the lead with maintenance supply requests, and she also, as a library assistant, supports my and the branch management of the collection deselection efforts. She helps me with some of the kind of behind the scenes stuff that we do to kind of catch the grubby, scary books that no longer can go home with people because they're not in good shape and need to be replaced. Pimalaki is our acting supervising library assistant. And she has been so incredibly helpful. She's a space managing maven. She could easily open an interior design business of her own or a space planning business of her own if we weren't working her so hard as an SLA. And I really do want to give her credit for having so many fantastic ideas to help make Claremont safer and more appealing to patrons. And I mean, and they just keep coming. She came up with another one today while she and Michael were walking in the children's area. And we've moved two chairs that have been in the same place for the 9 years that I've worked at Claremont. And they're so much better on the other side of the end cap. So sometimes they're really simple moves, but she's really good that way. She's also a terrific supervisor. She manages, she supervises the aides and the assistants. And with three new aides, she's been very busy training three new people. So she's a strong part of the team. And the last slide is one of our guards. We have a couple guards that come on a pretty regular basis. His name is Mahari. And on the right, you see me. And I do a little bit of what everybody else does and collection development right now for the teen librarian, for teen library collection as well, because we're waiting to hire a teen librarian, which is going to happen hopefully very soon. It sounds imminent. Last slide. So does anybody have any questions for me? And thank you for having me.
Shaney, it's Diane. Do you see the folks coming back into your library picking up? It feels at Central like the last couple of weeks. Finally, things have changed when I've been in. Is the same true for Claremont?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking, Diane. It's really exciting, actually. So there were a couple of days, maybe a month ago, it's like, okay, we're getting kind of close to where we're still not as busy as we were before COVID, but there were days that were heavy, right? Days where you like would have to call someone out to come and support you. And that hasn't been happening a ton. I mean, our circulation is 20% lower than it was. I mean, our ebook circulation is probably through the roof, but our circulation at Claremont was about 25% lower consistently since before the pandemic. I think in part because we're not having these programs that bring people in, and also because we're not seeing as many kids. You know, our circulation at Claremont was always more than 50% children's. And when I look at the numbers, adults circulation are still doing really strong, but it's hard to put, you know, kids go through picture books so quickly. It's hard to put 75 books consistently on hold for children. There are parents who do it, and I am so impressed. I'm not sure I could have if my kids weren't big enough to put their own holds on things right now. So it's, in answer to your question, it's really picked up recently. The last couple of Saturdays that I've worked, so over like the last month, it's felt really busy and in a really good way. And we recently reopened, you know, for a little while we had the flex space, which is the flexible programming space in the back of the library, not open because we didn't really have a place to put furniture. So we were storing furniture that wasn't on the floor. And that was also a place for staff to work because Claremont is the smallest location and all the desks are on top of each other and we're all sharing. And we reopened it. We had a staff meeting last Friday and talked about the fact that the demand for this is growing. We're having kids doing homework on the floor. And we really need to you know, how do people feel about reopening it? And then that conversation continued over the weekend and we reopened it. And as soon as we reopened it, people flowed in. So I feel like we saw a ton of families last Saturday. I'm working this Saturday and I expect I'll see the same thing.
Thank
you. Long answer. You're welcome.
No. Right.
Anybody else? No?
I don't see anybody's hand up. Trying to be careful and look. The branch looks beautiful. You know, I'm ashamed to say that's the furthest branch from me and I rarely get there, but I'm going to make a point to stop in and take a look. It looks great.
Thank you. Well, we'd love to have you. We're sort of slowly planning some sort of like welcome back to the branch sort of thing. And I keep moving the date around, but it will be an outside street party kind of thing. So we'll definitely do something for National Night Out, but that's not until August. We might do something closer to the beginning of summer reading, maybe if we can plan something that doesn't conflict too much with the summer reading efforts that are happening at downtown.
Okay, Sophie, I see your name. I'm sorry, Sophie.
I was just going to thank you for the really delightful presentation. It is, you know, even virtually to actually see the people and their faces and hear about the work that people are doing, it really humanizes the whole thing for us. We've been very virtual for a long time. I also am guilty of the same kind of North Side bias here. I was over by the Claremont branch today getting chocolate, but didn't pop in and I should have. I think as we start reopening, it might be nice for maybe for 2x2 for us to take, or 2x3 to come, I guess three of us can't together, 2x2 to maybe come and visit each of the branches. I feel like, I mean, I haven't been anywhere. It's not special to the library. But it might be good as we get back in the swing to slightly more formally, and I guess this is really for Director Mayer, to kind of arrange a couple dates and times for trustees to get back in each of the libraries at, you know, at times maybe when the staff knows that we're coming and we can get a little tour and really say hello to people in person and thank them in person. I would really enjoy that. One more thing to do.
Yeah. We would certainly welcome the visit, and I'd be happy to co-coordinate for Claremont if I can take it off of Tess's plate or Eve's plate.
Right. Be great.
I'd be really delighted and to kind of just reconnect. So thank you. Thank you for this introduction to reconnecting.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you all for having me.
Are we ready to move on? Next, the second quarter year-to-date budget review, budget report, sorry. And Tess, maybe you would introduce the presenter.
Sure. First, I just want to thank Shani. That was a really great presentation. I appreciated hearing a lot about the differences in terms of the before times and after times, because I definitely missed some of the before times. And I do want to introduce our fiscal and administrative services manager, Nika Gallery. And she joined the library several months ago, replacing our former budget manager, Dennis Dang, who had worked at the library for many years. And so I really appreciate her rapid transition to the library from the former department that she worked in, which was health, housing, community services in the city of Berkeley. And we're lucky to have her. And she is here just to provide some updates in terms of the mid-year budget report and review our budget calendar, because we did acknowledge that some of us are new to the process. And so we thought it would help to talk about the actual timeline that we use when we're producing the biennial budget. So Nika, I'll turn it over to you now.
Good evening, everyone. So this is the report as of December, which is essentially half of the fiscal year. And so overall, our main resource of revenue is the library tax fund. And the same time period, the first half of the year in FY22 compared to FY21, we got slightly more, 10% in revenues than we did before. And as we are, I don't know if this is the second or third year of the pandemic, but on the expenditure side, we are down slightly by 14.7%. And of that 14.7%, about 3% of that was due to salary and wage costs that were down. But a lot of it was the transition of this time last year. We were into our central improvement projects, and the ones that we had scheduled to start this year basically started getting underway late December, early January. So those costs haven't been reflected yet. What else do you need to know that's highlighted? Compared to the time overall, ideally we should be spending about 50% of the budget, but due to our salary savings, we are at currently about 34.5% of actual expenses compared to the budget. And even with projections, we will unfavorably mean that we won't go over budget. I know we are working to field positions so that going forward, hopefully, because you know we can't predict for everyone that that will be less of a factor for us. And are we showing the slide of the calendar or am I just going to talk about it?
I wanted to put it up when you got to the calendar, so I'll throw it up now, sorry.
And if there are any questions about the numbers for the second quarter, you can ask now, I guess, before we start talking about the 23-24 budget process. Okay. Well, before you is the calendar. We have been slowly starting this process. It was in September. And as you can see now, we are preparing budget proposals to the budget office. And so that's where we are now. Once we do that, we will internally schedule meetings with our staff to talk about our budget and special meetings with you all to discuss the budget and finalize the numbers before we head into the new year and before it is approved by you all and included in the budget book and adopted as a whole for the city. Any questions?
Looks good, and I appreciate having the whole sequence laid out. And I think that parallels the desire on my part to sort of know what are we gonna do when in the cycle for a variety of things. So I just wanted to thank you for laying it out that way.
You're welcome.
Christy Solowski, it looks like your hand is raised. Or perhaps not.
Yes, it is. Thank you. So for you, Tess, or staff, or do you anticipate any special meetings for the budget, or do you think they're going to be handled during the regular meetings?
I think we're probably going to schedule a special one just because it may get very granular and we don't want to take up a regular meeting talking about specific details, you know, in relation to the budget.
So maybe May? What's your thought on that?
Yes.
Last year we had two presentations or two meetings in May. One was the regular meeting and one was a special meeting. So there were two general presentations to the board, one in April, one in May, and then the vote took place in later May. So some of this will be contingent upon the board and the extent to which you would like to discuss the budget proposal or have more questions for us before it goes to the vote. The other consideration is just the information about the tax rates, because we will have to vote to establish the tax rates. And sometimes that information doesn't come in, but where it comes in at slightly different times.
Right.
So that could happen too.
Right. The tax rate, am I remembering correctly? Certainly after May 1st, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are there other questions for Nika? I do not see hands up. Okay, Nika, I'll show my ignorance. What is YOY? What is that other than an existential question? It's on the charts after actual second quarter and the next column. What does that stand for?
It might be in several places, but YOY is year over year.
Year over year. Okay.
So depending on if you're the first chart where it's talking about the second quarter, it's comparing the same time period of, you know, FY22 and the previous year, FY20.
Got it. Thank you. I could not figure that out. Okay. I still don't see any hands. Thank you very much for that report. That'll help us be prepared.
I raised my hand.
okay, John, go ahead.
I couldn't resist. I love the why, oh, why existential question. I mean, because existential questions are in the air right now. Thank you.
Aren't they, though?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Nika, very much.
You're welcome.
I thought of one other small question. I was curious, on the library tax, we have a 10.2% increase year over year. That's at the halfway mark for the year, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So that could just be a timing issue. I'm wondering, do we get our revenue faster in one part of the year than the other? We at the end of the year, we know what we got that year, but halfway through the year, we got everything that we were expecting for the year, or we got nothing we were expecting for the year. We don't have a steady flow, right? The tax receipts come in these big lumps and dumps. Right. So is it possible that we get sort of 60% of the revenue in the first half of the year and 40% in the second half, and we end up having 100% of what we expected? See what I'm saying? I'm not sure I'm articulating it very technically, but.
Well, it's kind of like these are property taxes. So our property taxes are due between, I think the due date or the late period is like December 10th and like April 10th. So most homeowners, you know, either they pay between November and December if they're on time, if that makes sense. And so what happens is that payment is made and then the county does a lump transfer to us. So we'll probably get two big transfers and then maybe some smaller ones. But then something that I'm also seeing is that with low income and maybe some errors that are decided with after, there are very small like reductions. But as far as the big lump sums, we get them like maybe definitely two times a year, but it kind of depends on when people pay as well. So some may have been granted extensions for various personal reasons to where they might not be in the big lump sum amount that we get.
But that number, 11,714,843, we have no idea if that's 50% of the total amount that we will get by the end of the year. It's just the amount we have at the midpoint.
Exactly. And this doesn't account for tax revenues that are accounted for selling and buying of homes that come in, you know, through that period. So yeah. You are correct. This is just what we received at that time and the percentage of what we see the same time before. Like there is a budget, but if there are a lot of, you know, transactions that occur, it will change what our expectation is that we can't necessarily predict.
Okay. And then I guess by the same token, we're down 15% on expenditures at the midpoint, but by the end of the year, we don't know, right? It could be that we're down 5% or we're up 2% or something.
Right. Yes, a lot of it is due to salaries, but then what we have experienced with purchasing some things, especially with the pandemic, it has slowed, you know, the response time to where sometimes we can place an order and pre-pandemic, we'd get it in 2 weeks. Now we might get it in like a month or maybe 6 weeks. So that also has a timing of when we pay out things.
I think the other variable with respect to that is the deferred maintenance that we were talking about 2 months ago, because what we saw, for example, with respect to the stucco is that we were delayed in terms of initiating this project, but now it's underway and it's going fairly quickly. They're working, I think, pretty rapidly. But then, you know, in terms of the air conditioning replacement that we're also working on, Public Works is partnering with us on project managing that. Some of the speed at which that happens will also depend on supply chain issues in terms of when the parts for the air conditioners are actually available. So even though we're trying to expedite that as quickly as possible and work with Public Works in terms of making sure that we're contracting for that or putting that out for bid, there is a potential for variance there as well.
Yeah, and we won't know what it is until it's over, but certainly the information we have now suggests that we'll be in a strong financial position by the end of the year.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
I see no hands. Okay, thank you very much, Nika. Nice to see you. Nice to meet you, really. I look forward to shaking hands with people. monthly library director's report. Tess, you're up.
Well, that's actually interesting that you made the comment about shaking hands, because I think that we're all currently watching the governor in terms of seeing when the emergency order for the state of California might be rescinded. Mm-hmm. The reason, of course, that that's relevant for the libraries as well as the rest of the city is that it would determine for how much longer we would be doing remote meetings. Or, you know, for how much longer the variance with respect to the Brown Act would be kept in place. And so we're watching that very closely, and I will likely be advising the president and vice president on the status as to when we might be transitioning back to in-person meetings. It's something that could be happening in the near future, and so we need to ensure that we're in communication about that. I didn't want to forget to mention that. And so that would, of course, represent an opportunity for us to meet in person. As Trustee Solowski indicated, there's a lot of complexity occurring right now, all of you as citizens of Berkeley and the world are observing with respect to what is occurring with these different health orders and the public health jurisdictions at the national, state, and local levels, and the way that that's potentially impacting the library. So of course, in the printed report that I provided to you, I did indicate that the city of Berkeley was part of a joint health order that aligned with the state's masking guidance as of February 16th. And of course, at that point, the alignment was simply around allowing for indoor or vaccinated people to discontinue using masks indoors, with the exception of a few settings such as hospitals, public transportation, et cetera. But vaccinated people were still at that point, at the time of the writing of the report, required to wear masks. And it did allow for local jurisdictions for local businesses and organizations to establish their own rules. Now the landscape continues to change really quickly because we just heard very recently that Alameda County issued a new health order that permits unvaccinated people to go without masks in public settings. Mm. So that is now a very different a rule than what had been established a little bit earlier, a few weeks ago. Now, the city of Berkeley, of course, has its own health officer. We are our own public health jurisdiction, and we do not have a revised health order coming out of the city of Berkeley yet, but we can anticipate that there will be updates. And at this time, I don't know what the updates will be. So I can't speak to that. At this time, the library, as well as the city of Berkeley, is continuing to require both workers and staff, as well as patrons, to wear masks. The staff are definitely encountering increased friction. Unfortunately, the staff member that is here with us tonight just experienced a really terrible incident that occurred today, where the patron, among doing a lot of other things that were quite concerning in terms of physically approaching staff, intimidating, referenced the governor and said something along the lines of, "I do what the governor said." So I'm just mentioning that because the staff, of course, since we reopened, have had to manage all sorts of situations like this, but we do have concerns that this situation is going to intensify as we get closer to some of these dates where more of these restrictions are being lifted at different levels. So we're continuing to manage that, but I would not suggest that it's easy for anybody to manage. The other thing that I want to mention is that currently the Alameda County Library System and Oakland Public Library System are aligned with us in terms of continuing to require people to wear masks. However, what I am seeing is that a lot of other libraries are beginning to look at not requiring people coming in to wear masks, regardless of vaccination status. And I'm talking about other Bay Area libraries. I'm not talking about nationally. So we're already aware of and starting to see changes in terms of some of our neighbors. So I did want to point that out. It's something that we're watching very closely. As Andrea mentioned during her comments, we did have another resurgence of COVID in our libraries. We had two positive cases associated with staff members at the North Branch. I think that there isn't more that we can say with respect to the situation there. We don't have additional information at this time. But we did follow all of the guidelines that we need to in terms of contact investigation, making sure that we're communicating with people around quarantine and isolation periods. I do want to call out that there's a change now that has occurred with the city of Berkeley. The guidance with respect to how we handle these cases has changed. It is based on what the Cal OSHA standards are. So in the past, it used to be that if a staff member were determined to be a close contact of another individual who had a positive infection, that person would have to quarantine regardless of their vaccine status. That has since changed. And now if somebody is vaccinated and boosted, or so recently vaccinated that they're not eligible for a booster, they are not required to quarantine. They can continue working, but they must take a test on the fifth day after the exposure. So I do want to clarify that the city's procedure has changed, and we continue to follow the procedures that are established by the city of Berkeley with respect to that. I want to mention that our Terea Hall Pittman location has continued to host vaccination clinics. We had two more on February 15th and February 22nd. And I also just wanted to mention that the long delayed AERP tax assistance program has been restored this year. And we've been able to provide in-person tax help at the Central Library, at the West Branch, and at Terea Hall Pittman. And it is an intense program to manage. It requires a lot of communication on the part of staff with all of the folks that are looking to make appointments or be connected with tax preparers. It's an incredibly valuable service for people, especially lower income people, because the volunteers that work for AARP really help people identify ways that they can make sure that they recoup their full whatever returns they have coming back. And it's such a popular and valued service that I was really happy that we were able to offer it in a modified way. And I really credit a lot of the staff with creativity in terms of working with the AARP to come up with a way to do it so that it could be done in a safer way, so that people were not working together side by side for an extended period of time, but there was still some connection that happened between the tax preparer and the client. So that's really valuable, and I appreciate that very much. I also just wanted to mention that the programs that Trustee Green referenced in the beginning of the meeting, the different programs that we had to celebrate both Black History and Lunar New Year, you know, were really successful, very well received by the community. And I did want to include those pictures in the board packet of the lion dance that occurred for a very brief amount of time in the Central Library. The lion did not move through the whole building. But it was the other pictures of these kids. I wanted to provide you with some context for this. I was watching all of these kids going into the library, getting books out of the children's area, coming out with their, you know, hands full of books. And I just thought it was so sweet that these kids, they had these books and they just plopped down on the sidewalk. And this was during the program, right? Like all of the lion dance is still going and it's, you know, very busy. And it was just really nice to see them absorbed and reading these books outside the library. I just thought that was a wonderful image that captured sort of the power of what we do and in both the unusual and also the very regular things that happen every day. So I wanted to conclude there and ask whether you had any questions with respect to the report. Yes.
Tess, in terms of the security guards, are they going to remain on site at all of the branches as well as Central for the next while? Because it feels particularly well the masking issue gets solved. There are at least some help to folks who are in the branches for some resources helping them out in those sort of difficult situations. So are they ongoing for a while?
They are ongoing for a while. One thing that I wanted to share with respect to that is that when we reopened the locations for in-person service, we extended the hours that the security guards usually had. So in the past, they were only at the libraries for sort of pockets of time. And we found that that was leading to staffing issues. So we extended them for full shifts. In part because that was what the staff wanted and requested. And also it was better for the security guards, you know, to have that much work guaranteed. And we had a very robust conversation around this during the joint labor management meeting that we had when we discussed this. And it was recommended in that forum that we continue providing staffing, or excuse me, funding for more hours, more security hours. And so one of the things we'll talk about next month when we come to you with a budget presentation is that we are increasing the budget for security just to ensure that beyond the pandemic, we can continue to provide that, because the reality is that some of this is happening because of the masking controversy and because of the impact to the community because of the pandemic, but there have been really challenging incidents all along, as I know you're familiar with. And so I think that we just want to keep this in place. We think it's important.
I think that's really great. It is one of the ways to really support staff, even when there are staff vacancies and whatnot. It is something that we can do to give them some more security in these times. So that's great. Thank you.
Tess, it's very, it's lovely to hear you being so moved by the children and the pro, you know, being engaged in the program and running out of their library with books. I know when I take my grandchildren to the San Francisco Library in Glen Park, they come out with a stack that, you know, here, Nana, you carry these, and then I'll carry the other stack. We can barely get back up the hill. And it's a great thing to see. And I'm happy to see you haven't lost your appreciation for that in the stress. Yeah. Oh, Beverly, I see your hand.
Thank you. So I just want to circle back to the need for security. I understand that. Let's just make sure that we continue to provide an environment that continues to be inviting to all of our communities.
Yeah.
That's an important, it's really the first thing that patrons encounter when they come in, right? Those security people are pretty much right there at the front door, and their personality makes a big difference in how people feel. I agree completely.
Yeah.
No hands. Oh, Sophie, I see it.
They'll never disappoint you on that, right? I just want to say that I think Trustee Green's comments makes me think a little deeper about the question of whether having security guards at the door, not everybody who is greeted by a security guard responds in the same way to someone in a uniform, whether armed or not. I think there has been a different experience of things that feel like policing for people who have traditionally been well protected by police versus people who have not felt as well protected and have felt at times targeted. And I think it would be an interesting topic for us to understand why we have security guards at the entrance to our libraries, whether we need them at all. I'd like to understand what is the purpose that they serve, and also consider the question of whether a different kind of person might be able to fulfill that purpose or a different placement. I guess I just feel like it's worth pausing for a moment and thinking about, I don't think anybody ever expected that in a library, the first person that the public would be encountering was a security person. I think traditionally the idea was that you walk into a library, you're not thinking about anything other than books and loveliness and programs, and at, you know, that the people you encounter will be librarians and library aides and, you know, all these really nice people who are there to serve the public. And it is different to walk in and have a security guard there in a uniform. And some people think, wow, that makes me feel really secure. Maybe my pocket won't get picked, you know, or my purse won't get. And other people see that and they think like, you know, are they there because of me? So I really think we should think about this. I don't know if Trustee Green had that much in what she was bringing up, but it triggered some deeper thinking in me.
I appreciate that. I appreciate both of your comments. Oh, sorry. I think that I'll defer to Trustee Green, who wants to respond to Trustee Hahn.
Okay. Yeah, so you know what? Thank you for delving a little bit deeper into that. I was trying to come up with the appropriate way to share and people still be responsive to my comments. So the thing that I wonder is if actually upon seeing the security guards, some people just don't go to the library, right? So that's also an impression. I do understand the need for access to security. There are many people who come to the libraries, the vast majority of whom have great intents, but I also understand that there are people who come to the library who, you know, are not necessarily initially interested in looking at a book or a computer, right? There are people who may have some other issues. So I think a fuller discussion of this is worth it. I mean, when our staff needs security, like I want security to be there for our staff and for our patrons. I just want to make sure that we have an environment that is inviting, and just so that people won't think, oh, there's a security guard at the door, I think I won't go in. So
this is certainly something that we can explore in more depth in a future meeting. I will add that it's definitely a topic that libraries and library staff around the country are discussing. Some places have opted basically not to have any form of someone in a uniform. The same issues also touch on whether or not the police are called to respond to incidents that occur in libraries as well. I've experienced positive responses. I've also seen some pretty upsetting situations unfold, and I think that the staff has as well. The staff has a lot of perspective on this. I've seen office security officers in uniform be the most welcoming to every single person that comes in. I've also seen people really potentially be unwelcoming and unsuccessful in terms of just extending the warmth that we would want to extend to people. So I think this is a very serious issue. I think it's a concern at Berkeley Public, and it's something that people have been concerned about and really debating actively over the past several years. And again, some places have opted not to have them. I also just want to mention to clarify that some of our locations have opted not to have one too. And that's something that we discuss site by site, that if the staff at a location determines that it's not something that they do want, we discuss that and we respect that as well. So I wanted to mention that there isn't a presence all the time at every location. It looks like there's two other hands up here.
I just wanted to ask, are the security people in library employees, or do we use a service, or how do they get selected?
Right now, the whole city of Berkeley uses the same contractor to provide the service.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly significant pros to having in-house security,
mm-hmm.
Because then you can manage the training,
right,
and the orientation, so that they understand what the library is about and what we're trying to do. On the other hand, making a transition like that is something that will take years, especially when we're looking at the personnel situation that we have. So I want to be really clear about that, because I don't want to create false expectations about what that kind of transition would look like.
Thank you, Tess. Sophie's got her hand up.
I actually see that Mika has her hand up as well, and I've already spoken. I don't know if I should go next or wait.
Okay, Nika's video is
on. That was an accident. I'm sorry.
But go ahead, Mika.
I think she said it was an accident that her hand was up.
Okay, you're all right. That Sophie, go ahead.
Yeah. So first of all, this is not agendized for today.
Right.
The only thing I was trying to do was say that I thought I heard an opportunity for a deeper conversation in what Trustee Green, her initial comment. and that it had already triggered some additional thinking on my part. I am not advocating for anything. I'm not criticizing anything. I'm just saying that it made me think. And I would like to have a deeper conversation about it, but I think we should have that deeper conversation agendized and where all of us, and with actually some data and information at hand. I think it's nice if our security people are nice people and they're welcoming, but a uniform is a uniform. And we need to think about it. I think we should. The city is engaged in a process of reimagining public safety to actually rethink who is safe, what makes people safe, how do we deploy our safety resources, what is the full spectrum of our safety resources. You know, it may be that we decide that we need two security people at every location, but we don't want them at the front door. Or it may be that we decide we'd like a security person at the front door, but they're not in uniform. You know, I don't know. We don't have any data. We haven't heard anything from the community. We haven't heard anything from our employees about how they feel about it. I just think it's not a cursory topic. It may be something that we have taken for granted. And so my ask is that we actually agendize, not necessarily at the next meeting, but that we agendize for the future an exploration of this question that involves some data gathering and some real information, not how I feel or any of us feels, but to actually learn from the community how they respond to this and think outside of the box. If there's any part of our community that does not feel welcome, that's a really big issue. And we need to figure out a way for everyone to feel welcome and for everyone to be safe. And I'm sure there's a way to do that, but I'm not sure that we should assume the status quo is optimal. So that's all I'm asking, is that we actually think about it. Thank you.
Okay, well, coincidentally, the next item is items for future agendas. So I think we can assume that will happen. I think it's a valuable discussion to have. Is there anybody who would like to propose a different item to add to future agendas? Let's see. Sophie, your hand is still up. No? Okay. Diane?
Amy, when we have the discussion about the security guards, I think it's also really important that we get the staff perspective on security guards, because I know from my time working there that the staff has thought long and hard about security guards, has changed its mind over the years, has done a tremendous amount of training of themselves and the security guards. So I think that's an important thing for us to know as well. So that part of it would be important for me to hear too.
Excellent point. Okay. Tess, you have your hand up.
Thank you. I just want to mention that we will be providing the first budget presentation next month, as well as another departmental presentation.
Okay. All right, I'm not seeing any hands. Do we
have the staffing report as well? It's reconfirming. I'm reconfirming that we'll have a report on staffing as we do.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Do we need to have a motion to adjourn to close session?
Yes.
Am I correct? Okay. So does somebody want to move that?
So moved.
Thank you, Diane. Who's seconding? Well, I will. Okay. And can you call the roll?
Please. Amy Roth?
Yes.
Sophie Hahn?
You're
still
not hearing me?
I'm sorry?
Are you still having trouble hearing me?
Just now again.
In and out.
Yeah. Very weird. I'm so sorry. I have like a fancy speaker.
Okay. Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And John Solowski?
Yes.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
So I want to confirm that I sent the Zoom link for the closed session to your emails.
Yes.
I'll open up that meeting and wait until you get there.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. There's leave.
Thank you, Eve.